Welcome. My name is Asam Stolu. I'm a trainee editor of the UEG Journal, and you're listening to the UEG Journal podcast. Each episode will highlight one of the most relevant articles recently published in the journal, with the purpose of learning from the most recent evidence and to provide a platform for authors to discuss the most important findings of their research. Hello and welcome back to the UEG Journal podcast. Today I'm joined by Dr. Mathias Bruegel from France, and we're really excited to be talking about his paper titled Association Between Pancreatic Adenocarcinoma Risk and Concentration of Organochlorine Pesticides in Adipose Tissue and Urine, a Targeted Screening Analysis Case Control Study, PESTIPAC. So welcome, Mathias. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So could you start by introducing yourself and your co-authors and then give an overview of your paper?
Yes, of course. I'm Dr. Mathias Bruegel. I'm a gastroenterologist and a digestive oncologist. I'm also an epidemiologist, and I work at a Bayonne hospital in France. For this paper that I led, I was very grateful to have on my side Professor Olivier Boucher, who's a digestive oncologist and also my mentor. And I had also a surgeon from my team. They all collected the adipose tissue samples. And of course, Suleiman El Balki, who's a biologist from Limoges Hospital, and he made the biological samples into real results.
Lovely, thank you. So I understand that you screened for pesticides and organochlorines in your study. Can you give us some detail about how you screen these pesticides and metabolites using targeted analysis? I know you're not a biologist, but just a snapshot overview of how you guys looked at these metabolites that you then did analyses on.
Of course. So Suleiman's team tried to target some interesting organochlorines in these samples, adipose tissue samples and urine samples. We knew that for some of them, we were able to find them only in adipose tissue because they are kind of trapped in adipose tissue and they stay a long time in adipose tissue. He tried with a first gas chromatography and liquid chromatography spectrometry technique to target some of them. So it goes through a machine that gives you some curves and tries to identify specifically some of these chemicals. So when he knows what he's targeting, he can recognize the profile of these molecules and try to quantify them. And that's what he did. And we did the same for urines. So he used some enzymatic procedures to try to target these organochlorines. So Suleiman did a fantastic work in trying to identify these small molecules. And the real thing that that he brought to this study is targeting so many different pesticides and metabolites, because we had more than 300 of them, about 150 for urine and 150 for adipose tissue, roughly. And he did a great job trying to target all of these molecules and trying to find associations between pancreatic adenocarcinoma and these molecules.
Thank you. If I understand correctly from your methods, you also collected a fasting blood sample before the surgery. Was there a reason why you didn't use the blood sample to also look for these molecules, or was the blood used for something else, or do you plan to look at the blood in future?
So we used the blood samples to adjust on our results for adipose tissue. We didn't look those organochlorines in the fasting blood samples. At first, we wanted to focus only on adipose tissue, and by doing that, only analyzing them and not doing extra analysis. We had quite a small budget, so we had to pick not random analyses and just pick the right one. So we did only adipose tissue and urines, and we used albumin and lipids within fasting blood samples to adjust our analysis to be sure that they are well correlated.
Okay, thank you. That's interesting. Yeah, I wonder if you detected pesticides in the adipose tissue, which were clearly retained but not reflected in the urine. So I wondered whether the blood would reflect those concentrations or not.
That's a very good question, because we could think that there's a balance between what is in adipose tissue and in blood. And some reviewers pointed out that this could be the case, because when you sample adipose tissue, you can sample in various places in the abdomen, and you can find different levels of organ clearance in these different samples. So we tried to stay quite consistent in the way we sample adipose tissue in the abdominal cavity, but still there can be a variation in between or within each case. But yes, that would have been very interesting to compare adipose tissue, urine, and fasting blood sample to know if there's any correlation.
Thank you, Matthias. So I was wondering which methods and computational packages you used to do your analyses.
So I can only answer for statistical analysis. I used RStudio. I did the statistical analysis myself, and we used quite a very common packages. And the most interesting one was doing the logistic regression. So we had to take into account the matching in the analysis. So that's why we used conditional logistic regression and not unconditional logistic regression as we used to do in other papers. So to take into account this matching criteria, we had to do the conditional logistic regression. And that's what we did. And in fact, when we compare both analyses, it's not very, very different. But still, that makes a very small difference. And that's still interesting to do these analyses that are well conducted in this case.
And your matched controls, which I think you used benign pathologies for those samples, what kind of conditions did that comprise?
So mainly diverticulitis. And some of them had cholecystectomy. So only benign surgeries. And they all had a CT scan previously to be sure that there was no pancreatic mass that could be maybe a pancreatic adenocarcinoma and maybe make control as cases, future cases.
Okay, thank you. And did you look at pre-cancer, such as acute pancreatitis, to see if these pesticides and organochlorines could also be detected in the adipose tissue of these patients who might then go on to develop PA?
That's very interesting, because there's a lot that is unknown about the path between pesticide exposure and pancreatic adenocarcinoma. We have very few toxicology reports that explain the right pathway from pesticide exposure to pancreatic adenocarcinoma. So we think that inflammation plays a key role, obviously, and inflammation in the pancreas should be pancreatitis. That's still something that we need to explore with maybe pathology reports, because doing these extra analyses are going to give us the hints and the answer that is the pathway between exposure and outcome. We don't have the answer yet, but I'm sure we will have this answer soon.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I guess because pancreatic adenocarcinoma still has such poor prognosis and is relatively difficult to study compared to the other cancers, maybe. I wonder also whether in your cohort, I know it's a case control study and from a single center, so I understand that, of course, you are limited by a relatively small cohort size, but did you have any, were you able to delve it further into the data to see if in your cases you had any kind of familial hereditary risk factors in that cohort? Or
we excluded those with genetic predispositions, for example, or also IPMNs, because we thought that there was a different oncology pathway going, and we didn't want these patients from pollute our cohort and be extra careful about some confounding. So we thought that genetic predisposition and also IPMNs would maybe use another pathway from exposure to cancer. So we excluded them, and for some of them, we had to exclude them after being going under surgery, because when we thought that there was a lot of IPMNs, and when the pathology report emphasizes the number of IPMNs and the fact that it could be the result of IPMNs, then we would say the main pathway towards cancer is maybe not pesticide exposure and can be any other factor. So that's why we were very stringent about how to pick the cases and the controls.
I see. That's really interesting. Thank you. And what do you think were the most significant findings of your study, and how do they change clinical practice?
So I would not say that this study changes practice, but it gives very interesting information about new risk factors of pancreatic adenocarcinoma. When we take a look at pancreatic adenocarcinoma epidemiology, we can see that there's an increase in the number of new cases, and we can see that the known risk factors do not match the numbers. And we have to find new hypotheses to explain why there are new cases of cancer. So this case control study is maybe small, a small cohort, a small case control study, but we can hypothesize that there are new risk factors, and that maybe pesticides are new risk factors that were maybe ignored in the past. So the main finding is that there's a higher risk, higher odds ratio for patients with higher levels of trans-nonoclor, cis-nonoclor, 4,4-DTE, and Mirex, which are four organochlorins which can be found in adipose tissue. And what is interesting is that these molecules are today forbidden. They've been banned and they are not used anymore. So some of them are banned since the 1990s, but we can still find them in the bodies of patients with pancreatic adenocarcinoma or controls or even controls. And this level of organochlorin did not influence survival, but still, that's a small cohort. We thought that this could influence survival because it could modify the way you create pancreatic adenocarcinoma and maybe creating more aggressive pancreatic adenocarcinoma. That was not the case, but that's something we need to explore. And just finding these first hints of link between pancreatic adenocarcinoma and pesticide is very interesting and need to be explored further.
Definitely. It's really interesting that these top hits that you identified are actually have been banned for some years. Just goes to show how potent these chemicals can be and how long they can reside. So hopefully in the younger generation, now that they're banned, we see fewer of these cases. But obviously I know there's still pesticides are still used, and I guess maybe tighter regulations are needed. So in your 300 targets that you analyzed, I guess there were some pesticides that are not banned, or were they all banned? Do you know?
No, in fact, most of organochlorins are banned now, but some of them were not organochlorins, and we had to maybe try to target other pesticides. Of course, such as glyphosate, which is a molecule that's highly used in France, that's more than half of pesticide use in France. We couldn't find that because it's not found in adipose tissue. It's not trapped in adipose tissue. So we knew that the levels of glyphosate, for example, was not going to be high. But we wanted to test that hypothesis and try to find more glyphosate in patients with pancreatic adenocarcinoma, or maybe show that there were higher levels of glyphosate in these patients. Going back to your last comment, that raises, of course, questions about early onset cancer and early onset pancreatic cancer. We've seen in the last decades a higher number of new cases of pancreatic cancer in younger generations, in adults of less than 50 years old. And that's something that is very strange to see this shift in the age of first diagnosis. That's still a small signal, but as I think we need to take over the problem right now in trying to study these environmental risk factors right now.
Absolutely. And do you know if there's in the literature any studies that have looked at the role of pesticides in any other GI cancers, or is pancreatic the main one?
There are other studies trying to look at pesticides and environmental risk factors, maybe in a broader term, and GI cancers. Unfortunately, the level of evidence that we are bringing to the table is still quite low. And we need to have bigger cohorts and try to disentangle the risk factors for, of course, classical, regular pancreatic adenocarcinoma or other GI cancers, but also for the early onset pancreatic cancers or other GI cancers. The fact that we are lacking power is quite interesting, and we need to maybe go further on this statistical problem that we have. So using the EPIC cohort, as some did, for example, in Spain, and trying to correlate pancreatic cancer with fasting serum and pesticide levels, for example, or PCBs, polychlorinated bifenyls, and other chemicals is very interesting. And I think we should go further for other GI cancers, for sure.
Yeah, thank you, Matthias. Final question, I guess, before we wrap up, is whether you've validated your mass spec findings with any other assays. I'm not actually sure if you can look at these chemicals in different ways, or is that something that you're planning to do, or have you done it already?
I'm not sure I can answer properly your question, but I think Suleiman's team has validated this way of conducting the analysis and validating the results, but I'm not sure I can precisely answer your question. I know that we are trying to do that for other chemicals, such as microplastics, and trying to do that in several different ways and try to validate some easier ways to quantify the level of microplastics, for example.
Microplastics would be really interesting to look at as well. So is that the future direction for your team?
Yes, that is definitely one of the main future directions. We have so many different environmental exposures to study, and microplastics is one of them. There were very interesting publications lately in microplastics and GI health in general, about microbiotes and also liver cirrhosis. So we need to go further in GI health and environmental exposure, but cancer is one of the hot topics of environmental exposure.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Matthias, for this really great interview. I look forward to seeing your future work, and I hope that everyone enjoyed listening to our discussion on your work. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you again.
We hope you enjoyed this interview, and if you haven't already, please make sure to subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your episodes from. Thank you, and see you again.